Hey Zwifters, I'm Simon Schofield, and this is the Zwiftcast. A special welcome to Australian Zwifters. Whilst the Northern Hemisphere is starting to ride outside more, your indoor season is just getting going. So with our Aussie and Kiwi friends in mind, and perhaps some new listeners to the Zwiftcast who haven't heard the podcast before, here's a compilation of some of the best features of recent weeks. Zwift is changing cycling, and I think one of the most exciting possibilities that the program enables is virtual coaching. One rider and one coach are already working together remotely, and they're getting results. Welcome to the Zwiftcast to Rick Woods, who's a Zwift rider, and David Lipscomb, who's his coach. Now, Rick and David worked out a really cute technical solution to an idea that Rick had, we'll find out shortly, about how Rick was going to improve his performance in a race with some live coaching. Now, this took place on the Tuesday night ZTR Early Birds race, which I know is popular with American riders and lots of European riders as well. So, Rick, you're the rider. Just talk us through what the idea was and why you decided to pursue it.
Well, I have to give the credit to Coach Dave here. We have a weekly meeting where we sit down and we talk about the previous week's training. And in that talk, David shared with me his idea of virtual coaching. He would get online on Zwift, coach them on cadence, breathing, all the things that we do as athletes to perform a nice workout.
And that's happening live in Zwift. David, what a sweet idea. How did you come up with it?
When Rick and I spoke about how can we, you know, kind of implement a solution to get people to kind of feel like they have somebody with them in the virtual world. So I came up with this concept of coaching people virtually, and we tried it, and I think it was very successful. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit.
Sure. No, it's a really good idea. Technically, how do you achieve it? What do you do, and what does your coach rider have to do?
It was either I could text him as he was riding, but one of the things I think was very difficult to see as the rider is in, you know, kind of full swing, is to actually see the text that comes through either their phone or live stream.
Yeah.
So what we did was really unique. I said, I'm going to call you on the phone. Just make sure you have your earbuds in, and I'm going to talk you through your race. I'm going to tell you the things that are actually happening around you. You know, whatever your cadence is, your breathing, and the most important is to breathe and hydrate yourself. It was the most, I think it was really unique to be able to see him live and see what the pack was doing.
I'm just going to stop you there just so that people really understand this. So,
sure.
So the idea of a phone call is obviously really simple to understand, but what do? You click on the rider and watch that rider so you can see all his stats live.
Absolutely. And it was really unique to be able to see, because there's like 9 different views I could see of Rick while he was racing. And at the beginning of the race, what I had to do was actually take it from the helicopter view and actually see exactly where he was within the group, because if I did it any other view, it would be like there's a whole bunch of riders in front of me.
Yeah.
So I could see from a top view where he was, and I should share with him, like, okay, Rick, you need to be here, you need to be there. So when the selection was being made, then I clicked to his view so I could see where he was at and whoever was in front of him or in back of him.
Mm-hmm. God, technology is a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Oh, it's beautiful.
It is. Yes.
So, Rick, this tactic of virtual coaching was deployed by you, as I say, in the Tuesday night race. How did it work for you? Was it incredibly motivational? Did it give you lots of tactical insight?
I was very nervous, you know, thinking that I was going to have my coach looking over my shoulder, watching everything I was doing. But once we got on the phone and started discussing, I mean, he even seen my heart rates were a little bit high. He was calm. He was telling me to take deep breaths. He was telling me a lot of things to do.
Give me a couple of examples of where you thought you got a real advantage from this really clever tactic.
When we first got the Libby, this was on the Richmond course, and usually the attacks are on Libby Hill. So when we got to Libby Hill, sometimes the screen where you see all the riders, a rider can get away from you and you not even know it because he's not even in the screen.
Yeah.
So David was relaying to me is, hey, there's a guy off the front. He's got 11 seconds on you. You know, pick up your tempo. He was sharing those things with me. So I sort of, you know, got an advantage there of being able to keep up with all the riders. Whereas if I didn't have him there, you know, I would not be able to keep up as well.
Yeah, it's like a second set of eyes. I mean, it's like having a team car with you in a way.
Oh, exactly. So, and then the motivating factor, you know, you're working your threshold or even VO2 max there. And it's, you know, a lot of times it's hard to think clearly, but with him talking as I'm working and sharing these things with me was just huge. You know, I can't say enough about it. You know, I think it just caused you to dig deeper and bring things out of your body that, you know, you would normally not be able to do if you didn't have someone talking to you.
Yeah, I think that's undoubtedly true.
Yes.
What impact do you feel it had on your performance in the race? Did you do better than you think you would have done if you didn't have the coach in your ear?
Positively. We were able to win the race, which I have not ever done before. Another thing, you know, someone.
Oh, so you won it. You won your category.
Yes, I did. I won the A category.
You've won the A ride. Wow.
Yes.
That is some going.
One of the things that I share with others that not only was he motivating me to a higher level, but several times during the race when the pace dropped and I got my heart rates back down into a comfortable zone, I was feeling sort of frisky. And at that point, you know, I was sort of trying to go to the front and maybe make these guys work a little harder. But Coach David, I guess working with me, he knows my heart zones and things, and he talked me through it. He said, Rick, don't do that. Slide back a little bit. Sit in here. Get all the recovery you can. You got Libby Hill coming up. So several times during the race, he talked me into recovery. And that I think that's very important, too, for a coach to be able to do that for you.
Yeah.
So, and that happened 3 or 4 times. I know he got me extra recovery, unless he was not, if he wasn't there, I would not have had.
Yeah, I can see how that would work because,
yes.
I mean, you know, I race on Zwift, and the temptation when you're not quite sure what's going on is just to keep the pressure up continuously, which obviously costs you a lot of energy.
That's right.
You know, one of the things Simon, I share with Rick was, Rick, don't be a hero here. It's not time to be a hero here. And you know, one of the unique things that I did was a couple of the riders that were in the breakaway with him, I clicked on all of their stats, and I'm like, okay, this guy is pushing bigger gears. He's gonna get ready to attack. Rick, you need to be ready. And it within seconds, it happened. Seconds, it happened. So
it did.
Wow.
I
have to say, I'm rather lost in admiration for this tactic. I think it's absolute genius. However, I'm going to ask the question that I'm sure a lot of listeners might possibly be toying with, mm-hmm. which is, and I'm going to ask you first. David, is it mm-hmm. fair?
Is it fair?
Does your rider have an unfair advantage? Or are you just using all the tactics available to people racing in Zwift?
That too. Yes, it is fair. And the way I see it is this. Number one, my primary responsibility is my client. Okay, so Rick is very, very adamant about doing well on Zwift and as a cyclist overall. So for me, it is fair for me to ensure that he's getting the best value of what he's capable of doing. Number two, it is also fair from my perspective that the tools that are available through Zwift, everybody has that access to.
Yeah.
So why not play in the same sandbox as everybody else would?
Absolutely. Get that. Mm-hmm. But the flip side of mm-hmm. that coin, of course, is you've just given away the secret.
That's okay. But you know what, though? Everybody has an opportunity to do exactly the same thing. However, I think I'd do it better. How to say it the way.
What about you, Rick? Do you feel that you did have an unfair advantage over some of those other A riders?
I did have those thoughts that maybe, you know, I would be scolded a little bit because of the community in general has, you know, looked at unfair advantages in a different way and made it vocal. But then I thought about it, and I knew it was I think it just opens up an opportunity for coaches in general to take this platform, not only in races, but also just in their general workouts during the week, take this platform and help their athletes and add value to their coaching service.
Yeah, so I agree with that. I can absolutely see how this could work, you know, not only in a competitive situation. Just as a matter of interest, what distance separates you two guys? Are you a long way apart?
About 600 miles.
Wow, that really is coaching by remote control, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, one of the things about Swift is the high degree of realism. So you know, why should we not exploit that to improve the coach-athlete relationship? Did you get excited, David, as Rick was progressing through the Swift race?
Oh my gosh, yes. It really felt like I was in a team car. It was amazing because it was like I was right there with him. I was pedal stroke for pedal stroke with him. I couldn't see his face, but I could see his effort, and he was digging so hard to stay away. And it was like, okay, we got this. If I had a whistle, I would have whistled, but you know, it was something else.
And what about amazing. You, Rick? I mean, you often see pro riders kind of tear their earpieces out when they get fed up of hearing the DS in their ear. Did you ever get tempted?
No, I did not get tempted, but David will back me up on this. He did ask me to try to do one move or make a move on the guys one time, and I was at my limit, and I said, he asked me twice to do it, and I said, David, I can't. I said, I said, I'm at the crack point. I can't.
So, listen, are you two guys going to do this again?
Certainly. If David Absolutely. Will help me, I will.
Absolutely. Yes.
Well, brilliant. I just think it's such a clever idea, and it's been really entertaining to talk to you both about it. David, I shouldn't let you go without giving you an opportunity to say the name of your coaching company. Who are you?
CIS Training System Cycling Program, based out of New York City.
That really was a cunning wheeze, and I think we're going to see virtual coaching grow ever more important and useful in Swift's future. Let's stick with fitness and coaching for the next feature. One of the hardest workouts in Zwift is McCarthy's Mix. I caught up with the man behind it. Welcome to the Zwiftcast to Mike McCarthy. Now, Mike is what I like to call a Zwift insider. In other words, he's one of the guys at the top of the business who helps decide how Zwift is shaped and what happens to us riders on the platform. Hi, Mike. Perhaps you could give me a better job description than that one.
Sure thing, Simon. I am in the most enviable position of being the VP of Partnerships at Zwift. I joined just after the product was launched last fall, the fall of 2014. And my role at Zwift is a little bit outward facing and working with the industry and developing industry partnerships for us, and as well as working with our team to see how we deploy those in the game and how we work with the industry in the game.
Okay.
So, really fun job.
Yeah, and you've been very modest, because what you haven't mentioned is that you are a former pro bike rider who enjoyed a huge measure of success, including a world track championship title. So I ought to say that, even if you won't.
Well, sure, and you know, maybe in homage to Star Wars, and a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, right? But yeah, it was a nice run, and certainly something I'm pretty proud of. And I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, but every once in a while, it's nice to realize that there was some good history there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that that will make what you're going to go on to say it deserves some respect. So what we're going to talk about really is getting the best out of workout mode. And you've got an interesting idea, really, that in some senses, people who are doing workouts should not be afraid of failure. Now, what do you mean by that?
What I've come to notice is that people's default effort level tends to be very safe. And even if they think they're going hard, there are very few times where you actually fail in an effort. And I say this with all due respect to people. People quit before they fail 9 times out of 10. And so when I see emails, and I see a lot of emails from people, and I, especially since I have a workout with my name on it, that's fairly difficult in the game. People are coming back to me and saying, "Wow, I couldn't do your workout. It was impossible, and it's too hard." And the point isn't for the workout to be easy. The point is to actually be able to work up to completing the workout. And so I've thought a lot about it, and I think that as someone who's definitely had to push their limits, the one piece of advice or guideline that I'd love people to work off of when they think about doing hard workouts is to embrace failure, that it's okay to fail. As long as you really believe you're failing and not quitting, it's the path forward. You'll never ever know where the limit is unless you get there and try to push through it. And oftentimes that entails not being able to finish what you started out to do. So it is, of all things, you know, when you asked me what the piece should be about, and I think quite succinctly it's failure.
It's a very interesting idea, Mike, that, and there's a couple of issues arising from that that I'd like to explore. Firstly, how many times should you tolerate failure on, let's take your workout, for instance, before, you know, you start to think, I really need to be going down a different track here?
So I would start my doing the what's known as the McCarthy special, and I have to actually give credit to one of my first coaches, Eddie B, who gave us this workout. And it was very in its very simplest form. You know, we did it on a trainer, and we'd start it and going through the gears. So 15, 14, 13, or 14, 13, 12 on the cog set in the back. We didn't have power, and we didn't, you know, do anything off heart rate. This was just an effort-based interval. So it was supposed to be hard, harder, hardest. And I'd start doing these in December, maybe once a week. And my goal was to be able to do three full 9-minute intervals. So 27 minutes of effort. And, you know, every December I'd start these and I would fail somewhere in the, you know, in during the first interval. And usually it was in the sixth or seventh or eighth minute of that interval. But within a few weeks, I'd start to work into them, and I could do the full three sets. And then I do them, I start working up a cog harder. So it really is, you know, I think for most people, they consider FTP to be a great benchmark and a metric of where they, you know, what their cycling ability looks like. But FTP is not your limit. FTP is a place where you can ride comfortably.
It's a time trial effort, really.
It is a time trial effort, but in order to it's a very safe effort, though, yeah. Right? You know that this is what you can do. But in order to really improve the whole cycling experience, being able to make higher efforts, harder efforts, and recovering from those is key. We see that on group rides all the time. If you get gapped off, you have to close the gap, and then you have to recover in the group. It's quite difficult. So, you know, the answer to the question, I've gone round and around here, really is there's no schedule. You should take the workout based on FTP, and if you fail on the first one, it's fine. Come back and see if you can go another minute the next time you try it, and keep working into it that way. Eventually, if you're being honest with yourself about your effort and not quitting, you should be able to do the workout as it's prescribed in the game.
Yeah, and there are parallels to real life riding there. I mean, when I get back outside, I'll go out with my local club chain gang. It's got the fastest guys in the club there. A lot of them are a good deal younger and a good deal fitter than me. And I'll measure my progress by how long I stay with the chain gang. I mean, I'm going to get dropped at some point, but I like to get dropped later and later as the season progresses.
Effort is effort, whether you're in Zwift or on the road. It's the same thing. You still have to go hard. And you can craft that and learn about how to make those efforts in Zwift or on the road. It's, you know, yeah. Zwift is a great training tool.
Yeah, Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. Now, I'm going to be a bit challenging here because I absolutely hear what you say about embracing failure and slowly getting your way through that workout so that you do eventually succeed. But do you think that the gold star award when you successfully complete an interval kind of mitigates against that way of thinking a little bit? No one wants to not get the gold star.
It's a good question. We've talked about the star a little bit. Look, it's a reward, right? And if you should be excited when you get there and not go in with the expectation that you're going to get one. I think, you know, not to be harsh about it, but you shouldn't go in with a sense of entitlement.
Yeah.
You should really want to earn it. So I get that people would be a little, you know, upset if they're going in and say I'm doing the workout and I know I'm going to fail, but I still want the gold star for effort. Not everyone gets a trophy. You have to earn it.
I'd just like to finish this conversation, which I have to say I think has been incredibly useful, particularly for people who ride a lot in workout mode. But there's another nugget of wisdom I think that you can pass on, and I've heard this often before, is that, you know, people should not be afraid of riding very, very, very easy. And I think the problem with Zwift is it doesn't really encourage that, because, you know, you get out there and you get drawn into little battles. But you've got something to say about that.
Well, Zwift is a game, right? And we all get on there to play. It's a playful environment. It's a social environment. And being disciplined is really difficult.
Yeah.
I have that problem. I love chasing jerseys just as much as anyone. But that's where the discipline component comes in. And if you can be disciplined enough to go super hard and not be afraid to fail in your efforts, you should also be disciplined enough to go out there and completely turn down the efforts, and, you know, sort of laugh when you see people come by you going 8 watts a kilo and say, all right, well, that's not me today. And active recovery is a really important component of what I do on the bike. So,
And what we're talking about here, Mike, we're talking really zone two rides, aren't we?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I do rides where the heart rate, I try to keep the heart rate under 120 the whole time. And it's actually quite pleasant when you get out there and do it, and makes the legs feel pretty good. So I guess what I always propose is that people really think about being dynamic with their training, which means raising the upper level and dropping the lower level, and maybe spending a little less time in that mid-range, which is where we all like to go most of the times we do group rides, for instance. It's the medium hard efforts, right? You're never really, really on the rivet or crushing yourself, but you're also going pretty hard. Quite honestly, you don't get a lot from doing that. So it's I think be dynamic is the message. I always find it interesting when I'm out on a ride, and I pass somebody going, 5K an hour faster, and they immediately jump on my wheel, and I think, why are you doing my ride now? You should do your ride. And I know it's exciting. That's what cycling is all about to a certain degree, but I think that we all have to be committed to our own programs, no matter what those are. And quite honestly, if your program is just all about going out and doing group rides and being social, that's great. But if you're looking to improve, commit to your program.
Wise words from Mike McCarthy. Now, it's a fair bet that if we love Zwift, we love cycling. And we're all fans of its transformative effects. One guy who exemplifies this and spoke so articulately about it is called Marcus Neal. When he posted his story on the Zwift Facebook groups, it got an extraordinary number of likes. I thought it would be good to find out some more. Let's just start by giving us a picture of why you joined Zwift and what you got out of it, and then perhaps we'll try to understand why your story was so popular. Just give us a bit of history.
Yeah, sure. I was diagnosed with depression a good few years back now, and was put on a course of medication, which, as per my Facebook post, did go some way to sort of taking the edge off slightly. But it didn't really feel like it was it was sort of papering over the cracks. It wasn't really a solution to the problem. It was really just masking things. After pestering my better half for a while to buy a bike sort of slightly beyond my means, I got out there and the effects were immediate.
Yeah, as cycling works like that, it's I think it's, you know, without a doubt, the single best cure for depression available of any kind. So you started cycling outside?
Actually, it was sort of April, May of this year that I started. And we had obviously had a reasonable period of weather for a while. But it was a genuine concern because it became, as I'm sure with 90% of your listeners, it became a genuine addiction. I was concerned that the winter months were going to stop me from being able to satisfy that, and that's when I stumbled across Zwift, and certainly made things a lot easier over the last couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, you've had some real tangible benefits, haven't you?
Absolutely. It's both physical and psychological. I also have a neurological condition called myasthenia gravis, which, for anyone that doesn't know, literally translated means grave muscle fatigue. And mine is restricted or certainly focused on my eyes, which basically means I don't have full muscle control over the direction of my eyes. So it manifests itself in sort of blurred vision initially. And then it progresses to the point where I don't have the muscle strength to keep my eyelids open. It was managed by a course of steroids. That the side effects of that, which again, I would imagine a lot of your listeners can relate to, the side effects were quite significant weight gain, general feeling of unwellness, and it just sort of emphasized the depression that I was already feeling.
What weight did you get up to, Marcus?
I'm only 5'10", and I got up to 15, just over 15 stone. I started cycling around sort of April or May time. My first ride, I recall very clearly, rode down to my village green and back, which is a roughly 2 kilometre round trip, and I was absolutely spent. to the point of thinking, I've just wasted quite a bit of money on a bike I'm highly unlikely to ever sit on again. Going through the pain, there was also a feeling of, you know, that felt good. That was, you know, the natural endorphins were kicking in, and there was a hunger to try and sort of push myself through that barrier. And as such, as everybody does, just build up the distance slowly. And consequently, the weight started. Well, firstly, I sort of felt like I'd come alive. So I felt lighter, I felt fresher, and felt like, again, going back to my Facebook post, I think I described it as sort of feeling like I'd just woken up, and that's probably the best way I could put it. It felt like I'd been plodding about for the last few years in a sleepy kind of mode, and the second I did something about it, i.e. jumping on a bike, I just had a whole new lease of life without wanting to be too sensational about it.
Well, no, it's a familiar journey, actually.
Yeah,
you know, not to dismiss your experience, but you know, lots of people talk about a life before bike riding and a life after bike riding, and that sounds like it's the same for you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something I actually was aware of from reading similar posts prior to me even starting it, and was very sceptical. You know, it's my thought was that it's not going to work for everybody, and the way I was feeling, there was no way it was going to work for me. I really just did it out for a sense of fun and maybe escapism, but the benefits were so much more than that. And in terms of the physical benefits, I've now, my weight as of yesterday, actually, after jumping off the bike on Zwift, my weight was 12.5 stone.
Oh, that's fantastic achievement. Well done.
Yeah, thank you. No, it was it felt good, and I've got clothes that I can now fit in that obviously I previously couldn't, and just feel a lot better about myself. And my whole family have benefited from it, in that I definitely am more alert, more fun with my kids, and just feel like I'm a little bit more present in their lives than I have been for a good number of years.
Well, it's a really wonderful story to hear, and not uncommon, but no less kind of significant for that. And do you think that's why that, you know, your story? And you didn't pour your heart out; you just kind of gave a few basic facts. Mm. But it was an incredibly popular post, and there was so much support for you. What do you think lies behind that?
I think it's exactly what you said. I think it's just that it's not an uncommon story. I certainly my sort of level of depression and sort of self-loathing over a period of time certainly wasn't extreme. It was something I was able to manage to a certain degree. So there will be others that I'm sure will come across during the course of these forums that will have sunk to much sort of deeper levels than I have. But I think it's the fact that it is so relatable to everybody, regardless of how extreme you feel it is. It's relevant to your own life and sort of how you feel before and after. And I can only attribute it to that it's just something that everybody can sense in their own minds.
Mm. What extra dimension to your cycling life has Zwift given you?
I'm not an overly confident rider, particularly in wet or dark conditions. Again, I think this goes back to my condition with my eyesight, and my night vision is pretty poor, and my sort of speed of focus isn't particularly quick. So it tends to make me nervous, particularly with obviously traffic and anything that can add an extra obstacle in front of that, be it rain, wet leaves, whatever it is, make that harder. So I know a lot of hardcore cyclists out there will be thinking, you know, sort of man up and get on your bike and get out there, which I'd love to do. But it sort of kicked in to the point where I really did fear that over the winter months, it was going to be sort of hang up my spandex for a couple of months and just sort of grin and bear it. And so I was genuinely concerned that I was going to sort of sink to this, sink back into the lows that I'd felt previously. And Zwift, not just from the exercise point of view, it's the community and the social side of it is beyond any other digital forum I've come across. And I've tried a few. I have to say that 99% of the people I've come across on Zwift have been absolutely fantastic, very inspirational, very encouraging, always willing to help. And I can only assume that's because we all join Zwift for exactly the same reasons. We love cycling. Want to carry on doing it regardless of what the weather is, and I'm only interested in talking if I'm talking about bikes, if I'm honest with you, and it gave me another outlet for that. So it's been absolutely amazing. This is a tool that should really be used to get out every bit of frustration that builds up inside you, every bit of loosen up your tight muscles if you just want to sort of relaxing training ride. But just it's something that brings together all sorts of people. It's a real outlet to see these inspiring programs that these guys and girls are going on, the massive rides they're all doing, and it really just encourages me to go keep going back on and on and on. And it's a fantastic thing. I mean, there are times when I've done what I would consider to be my target ride for a day, and then it'll be 2 o'clock in the morning. I'll flick on the app, see there are 600 people riding, and think, do you know what, I could just put my bib shorts back on, run back downstairs in the middle of the night and jump back on again.
It's funny how we do that, isn't it? I mean, absolutely. You know, I do flick onto the app from time to time and just scroll to the bottom to see who's riding the most and just give a few ride-ons out. It is an incredibly supportive community, and I think one of its appeals, perhaps, is the kind of shared experience. You know, we're all riding in the same place, and we're all riding on the same terrain, and we've got lots and lots to talk about. Whether you race or whether you're in the sub-2 group or you know, whatever you get from Zwift. Do you do much riding in groups?
I'm just trying to sort of build up the base miles at the moment, but I have done a couple more recently, and managing to hang on to the coattails a little bit better, but the sensation of that is fantastic. And I've not done any group rides in real life for the same reasons that it's nerves. You know, I don't want to be the one that's getting a taxi home while everybody's 50 kilometers ahead of me. So to be able to do that with a level of anonymity in Zwift has been fantastic. Mm. And the chatter within game, the Facebook posts afterwards of sharing images and sort of the individual battles that are going on within the groups, even if it's not a race, it's just a casual ride. There's always, you know, there's always something you want to get. You'll pick up on a name that's consistently a certain distance ahead or behind you, and you focus on a battle with that particular person, and it's just fantastic. It's opened up a whole new level of cycling, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Marcus, I think you've encapsulated a lot of the features of Zwift that people find so appealing at every level of cycling, and I think that's why I wanted to bring somebody like you onto the Zwiftcast. You know, you're not a racer, you're an ordinary cyclist, but there's lots and lots of ordinary cyclists out on Zwift, and I think you've spoken extremely well on their behalf, and it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, thank you. No, it's been my pleasure. I was delighted to be invited to come on, because it's something I do feel more and more strongly about because of how it's making me feel, and if we can make more and more people aware that it can definitely do that for you, then fantastic. I'm happy to help in any way I can.
What a great guy. I'm not sure which trainer Marcus rides, but it's true that the two smart trainers that Zwifters probably lust after most are the Wahoo Kicker and the Tax Neo. They're both a bit pricey, but for a few weeks last winter, I was lucky enough to have both in one place. So I thought it might be interesting to do a compare and contrast review. I can't cover every aspect of each trainer. James Gill's review on Titanium Geek is very comprehensive, and I'd strongly recommend it. But I would say that these are both excellent trainers, which are superb machines for Zwifting. I'm going to take a look at two aspects: the noise that each one makes and how each one responds to gradient changes in Zwift. I'll also range over some of the small quirks of each trainer, especially how they react going downhill, and we're going to hear from Wahoo and Tax on why they think you should go with their product. Let's start with the Neo, and I've rigged up a fairly good decibel meter to give us a sense of noise levels.
Okay, so I'm on the trainer in my pain cave, which is a fairly quiet room. So I'll just see what decibel level that's giving us without me speaking. That's about 48 decibels, which my decibel meter is calling quiet. Okay, so we're on the Tax Neo, and I'm just going to cruise out and give you a reading by decibel, and you'll probably also be able to hear the noise of the trainer. So this is about 50 watts.
So what I'm going to do here is flip between the Neo and the Kicker. Same room, same recording setup, same section of track. Neo first, then the Kicker, starting at 50 watts and gradually increasing power.
Decibel meter's reading about 58. We're up to 55 decibels. 100 watts, it's about 62. Okay, now it's 100 watts and it's around about 60 decibels. Now it's about 150 watts and it's reading about 65. Most of the noise is chain noise. 150 watts, about the same decibel level as 100. So wind it up to 200 watts. Around 67 decibels. 200 watts, about 62 dB. Up to 250. About 68 decibels. 250. 62, 63 dB, and up to 300 watts. And it remains the same at about 68 decibels. And we're now at 300 watts. And it's up to about 65.
Interestingly, the Neo rated higher than the Kicker on the decibel meter through most of the test, but what you hear quite clearly is that the nature of the noise is different. The kicker's sound is higher pitched. It's more of a whine compared to the Neo's low rumble. And to me, that's more intrusive. There are ways to mitigate that on the kicker if you're in erg mode, by using the inner ring, for instance. But most of the riding I do is racing or group riding, which is in sim mode and needs gear changes. So for me at least, the Neo wins out. When I'm racing or pushing hard, and I've got a fan running, I'm simply unaware of the Neo's sound, whereas I can always hear the kicker, and to be honest, sometimes that's just a bit irritating. The differences may not matter to a lot of people, and you are paying a premium for the Neo, but for some people, it will be worth it. Now let's hear from the companies. I gave both Tax and Wahoo the chance to do a short pitch for their trainer. First, Kevin Abt, a marketing big cheese from Wahoo.
First, Wahoo pioneered smart trainers. This was a product category that didn't exist 3 years ago. So again, with Wahoo, you're going with the original creator of this category. Two, when you look at the kicker and the snap, they both have a flywheel. They both have a heavy flywheel that's on the device, and that's what provides the realistic road feel. And we like to say that you can't fake physics with a computer-controlled electric motor. Our flywheel approach provides the ability to accurately replicate what it feels like when you're first beginning to pedal the bike, and also the flywheel continues to spin once you stop pedaling to provide that realism of coasting, and that realistic road feel makes a huge difference. One of the other things that we hang our hats on is the quality of the material. When you look at both the kicker and the snap, there's no plastic involved. This is high grade carbon steel. This product it's heavy, which is a good thing. It gives you that stability, and it's really built to last. And the final piece is the connectivity. So with the snap and the kicker, Wahoo created our own proprietary Bluetooth smart or Bluetooth 4.0 trainer protocol for two-way communication. It's nice when you buy an iPhone or an iPad, you don't have to buy a separate dongle or an attachment that you have to plug into the Lightning connector or the 30-pin connector of your phone to get an Ant Plus quality signal. So less hassle, direct connection, and it's a protocol that was developed by Wahoo, and it's something that we've been fine-tuning for the last 3 years, and it's been widely adopted in the market.
Well, that's a really confident performance from Wahoo. They're only needing 4 of the 5 points, and I'm just going to quickly summarize what those 4 were. That is, we're the pioneers in the smart trainer category. We've got the best road feel, we've got the best build quality, and our connectivity is better than anybody else's. So, over to Mr. Tax. And Mr. Tax is Sven Roggeveen, who's also a marketing man. Let's hear the 5 reasons from Tax why the Neo would be the best choice for the consumer looking for a high-end trainer.
The Neo Smart is by far the most silent trainer on the market. I think that one is simple. We were the first training company to utilize the Ant Plus communication platform many years ago. This is the protocol used today by many software developers to create apps for the cycling industry. And it is the only open standard protocol that is certified by Ant Plus itself. And we developed their own open protocol over Bluetooth as well, that is open and being used by developers to set up an interactive communication between the Neo and any phone or tablet. So to make a long story short, the Neo is open and fully connected, and it responds very quickly on gradient differences. And furthermore, you can choose if you want to plug your Neo into the power grid or not. When you use power, it simulates downhill as well. So that's the electronic part. We also can simulate a flywheel of even 125 kilograms because it's controlled by firmware, and the heart of the Neo is very intelligent. Furthermore, the Neo measures 1,000 times per second how you pedal. That's the reason that it is accurate, but allows you also to have a smooth pedaling. Then point 4, the Neo doesn't have to be calibrated because there are no internal transmissions like a belt, for example. This means that the power readings of the Neo are very, very accurate, within 2%. And number 5, we invented the electronic controlled indoor training 20 years ago, We're very experienced in pioneering electronics in cycling.
That wasn't a great line. I'm sorry about that. So here's a quick summary of Sven's points. The Neo is the most silent electronic trainer. Tax is fully connected on Ant Plus and Bluetooth. The Neo responds very fast to gradient changes, and its 1,000 calculations a second make it a very smooth trainer. There's no need to calibrate, and it measures power very accurately to plus or minus 2%. And finally, Tax invented the electronic trainer 20 years ago, so they can be trusted. I wanted to pick up on one of Sven's points and test it. The speed of response to gradient changes is really important for a trainer used mainly on Zwift. We want resistance to match terrain as accurately as possible. So I rode through the S's section on Watopia on the Neo and the Kicker to see how they both performed. First the Neo, and I started on a downhill section to experience the powered descent feature.
The Neo is powering me downhill. I've stopped pedaling and my speed is increasing. Okay, my speed's beginning to decrease, so I've started to pedal again. We're now rising. We're at 2.8%, and immediately I can feel the resistance has changed. 2.3% resistance on, 1% resistance off.
It's a challenging section of the course for trainers, but the Neo handled it perfectly. Its response to gradient changes was instant, faultless. Now the Kicker.
In the valley now, up goes the resistance, and the Kicker bites, 3%, no delay there at all. Over the top of a roller, a slight delay. And as the gradient bites, the Kicker does increase the resistance.
I've had much more experience on the Kicker than the Neo, and there have been times when I've seen the Kicker slightly out of sync with the terrain. In these tests, I saw a tiny delay, and I mean tiny, on one or two of the rollers. Most people probably wouldn't even notice it. But if I had to come down on one side or the other on responsiveness, I'd probably give it to the Neo. But the difference is fractional. And the frequent firmware updates from both companies mean that these issues are addressed constantly and often improved. So if you're in the happy position of choosing between the Kicker and the Neo, which should you buy? To an extent, it depends on how you use Zwift. This is just my take. I race a lot, and I think the Neo works a bit better in races. I don't get dropped so much on the crest of hills anymore, because on the Neo, I don't have to spin up a big heavy flywheel like I did on the Kicker. The powered descent gives me a tiny breather on downhills if I'm right on the rivet. But in races, you still have to hammer down descents for fear of losing the pack, so I don't get that luxury that often. I don't get what I call the Kicker surge on the Neo, when you get gapped downhill, but as the road flattens or rises, the Kicker delivers a huge power surge, which helps you get back on if you've been dropped. The Neo seems to deliver a more even power level over gradient changes. I think the Kicker has a better build quality. It's so solid and robust, whereas the Neo has got a lot of plastic. The Neo has had some problems with early production models developing faults, and although Tax has been responsive in sorting these out, it is a worry for potential owners because it's a massively expensive bit of kit. Both of these trainers are brilliant. If you get either one, you'll enjoy Zwift on a different level. Which one? That's your choice. I hope this has helped you make up your mind. It's no secret that I'm a big fan of racing on Zwift, and one of the names with which lots of racers will be familiar is Nathan Guerra, mainly because of his fantastic live commentary.
Like, we've got SG from Team DZI coming out of Great Britain, putting on an attack. C. Weideman, who is the organizer, has covered that attack from X1.
We welcome to the Zwiftcast to the famous, in fact, legendary Nathan Guerra. Nathan, A lot of people will have heard your awesome commentary, but I gather you're also a pro rider. So why don't we just start by you telling us a little bit more about yourself, please?
So I race Revision Cycling, which is a company that I actually started. And so I race as a professional. I'm currently ranked number one in the USA with USA Cycling Rankings.
Okay. I didn't realize you were quite that good, Nathan.
That's it's been a challenge to make a business out of it over time and kind of entrepreneur myself into pro status financially, but at the same time getting results too, and just kind of proving myself over a long haul.
Now, I mean, you're obviously well known in the States, but you're probably better known globally as I think, you know, I think we can now call you the voice of Zwift. The voice,
oh my goodness.
The voice of Zwift commentary.
Francis Coppix, Casey Shum, this is a strong, strong group of riders today. A lot of the big hitters have shown up.
How did the commentary thing start?
I was playing video games and riding my bike in winter for up to 5, 6, 7 hours while laying down base miles. And then when Zwift launched, at that point when I saw that and I got into the beta, I said, okay, now it's time to start streaming for real, because there's an actual game that I'm playing that's actually the riding too. And so, and then once I started live streaming on the Twitch channel, so for those of you who are new to what is this guy talking about streaming, twitch.tv/NathanGuerra is a place where I actually live stream all of my riding. And that was getting a little bit of attention, and you know, that was fun and everything. But at the same time, it was just me kind of riding along, and people come and join me, and creating a community around live streaming is kind of the cool thing about it. That's kind of the whole niche with Twitch, is that you create a community around your gaming and you're just having fun with your buddies while live streaming it. Well, at that point, I wanted to start kind of growing the community through. It's not just about me and not just about my riding, but I think that there's a bigger grab with Zwift, that it's about everybody's riding, you know, and everybody together. It's events like the Zwift training races. It's events like what we'll have in the future, I think, with some of the race modes and stuff that Zwift's going to bring along, that really, I think, ignited in me that I want to broadcast these things. I want to make it more than just about me and my riding, and I guess that's kind of always been my heartbeat. It's going to be more than just the Nathan Guerra show.
Very fast. There's the group from the helicopter view. What a great view of the island that we've got here. Looking at the front, it's still a large group. I mean, look at how many we have here. 12 riders in this group. Are they all a part of this front group? I believe so. I think on the back here was Sidel Sin. One.
Cycling fans usually have a lot to say about cycling commentators, and not all of it's that good, to be honest. But, you know, I think you're really good. I think you're really good at it. Did you have any kind of experience, or do you just kind of say what you see?
I have a good speech background and good inspirational speaking background in public. And so anytime I give any kind of presentations on ideas or teachings, I've got a good background there. But no, I have no commentary background in that respect. To be honest, I watch my replays to try and get a good handle on how I'm doing. And I cringe a lot, actually. and I'm still learning, and I'm still trying to get it right. You know, if this continues to grow and continues to go somewhere, I mean, how far into this am I? I've only been commentating these for maybe 2 months. I think as we release more and more modes and different kinds of races, and as we get more features in game, it will really open it up, and also get new players and do other. I mean, there's a lot of the same people over and over again, which is great. I love to see the same people coming back, but I'd like to get a bigger mix of people as well.
Templar with a serious 10 watts per kilogram. Holy cow, on this 9%, 10% grade, this is where the race may be won, putting on this monstrous effort. Hansen on it, Coppix on it, on it, on it. The gap has been created. Coppix, Hansen, random Thompson, we don't want you in there right now. Sorry, Thompson. No offense.
Now, you see a lot of the strong riders on Zwift, you know, and the strong riders on Zwift are strong riders, full stop. I mean, they just are, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. you know, regardless if there's a little percentage off here or there, I mean, we're not talking about, no matter what, the level is Cat 1 Plus. You know what I mean? That's for sure. If you're riding at the front end of the A group and you're able to hang with that group all the way through, it's Cat 1 Plus for cyclocross race or better, because it is only an hour, you know? And so it does give to allow everyone in who can race for shorter distances and kind of just throw down for that a long amount of time. I'm excited to see if we ever have something that starts pushing into that longer 2 to 5 hour range. You know, my range for cross country racing is an all out effort for 1.5 to 2 hours. Then you have road racers that like 3 to 5, you know, and then up to tour riders, which is a totally different story. So we haven't seen anything in the racing world of Zwift yet that would really lean toward anything but those who can just hammer an all-out one-hour pace.
Yeah, it's a crit race, isn't it, really? It's a crit
essentially,
race.
Yeah, essentially.
Nobody wants to take the front. Here comes Templar with a 7 watts per kilogram. Oh, when is the move going to be made? It's got to be made soon. There's less than a minute to the finish line. Less than a minute to the finish line here. Templar on the front. Here we go.
These races are incredibly competitive, and you hear people saying it's just a game, it's just a game. Well, you know, if you're in one of those races, it's more than just a game, which opens up this issue of, you know, how fair is the racing on Zwift? And I know it's a tough question to answer, but I'd love to hear your view on it.
It is just a game for some. It isn't just a game for others. With a lot of us, it doesn't have anything to do with trying to prove something for ourselves. And I think people are taking it incorrectly and just aren't seeing it in the right light, that this isn't about me trying to prove that my numbers are right compared to someone else. In the moment, yes. At the moment, when I'm absolutely suffering at 180 beats per minute, I'm giving everything I can, and I look at that screen and I go, this better be believable because I'm giving everything I possibly can right now. And it gets a little frustrating if it isn't. But at the same time, on the bigger picture, it's about moving a platform forward that could do something really, really amazing in an online virtual venue that's accessible to the entire world instantly. Mm. That is absolutely amazing. And to move that kind of a venue forward with verifiable data is good for all the whole community, I think, from a from just a basic rider point of view, that you should have good numbers just for your own personal training and not be going off of false numbers for your own personal training and have false expectations, etc. But also so that we can have a competitive environment to push each other along with real numbers, and somebody doesn't race all year in Zwift, all winter season in Zwift, and then come out and get whooped on pretty good because they thought they were something that they were not that entire time. So it's good for the individual. It's good for the community.
Looks like Copix on the front has a slight gap. PK setting up at 10 watts per kilogram. Templar with a serious effort. Oh my goodness, look at this. Take that. Oh, Copix just barely, I think, got nipped at the line. It looks like it was Templar, Copix, and then PK and Hoskins in that front four. Here comes
Because we're not giving away money. We're not giving categories away. There isn't rankings going on that are super serious at this point. And I think that as we go along, that it's going to take a lot of time, and the process is going to be slow and steady as new features are added to verify power data from the mechanical side on each user's end, to verify weight in different kinds of ways. And as those features get added, I think that we can get more and more serious. But until then, it's just for fun, and we should all be using power-ups every time.
But listen, when you're commentating, and this is a naughty question, really, but when you're commentating and you see an obvious flyer, are you ever tempted to call them out?
I do once in a while. I mean, I do say that looks inaccurate during the ride, and I got a little pushback on YouTube recently from a rider, and I'm not trying to shame anybody, and I try to be as graceful as I possibly can with it to say, well, I think that maybe they should look at their setup and just get it correct so that everybody can ride together correctly, you know, in a way that is fair.
Yeah, and some of these things, it must be said, are genuine mistakes. They're not attempts to cheat. When you see people who are riding around the whole island at 10 watts per kilo, I mean, you must, you know, you do think, well, you must know something's wrong, dude. If you're you know, if you're beating pro riders, you must realize something's wrong.
I've seen flyers going around over and over and over again, and it doesn't, there is really, when it comes to everybody who's on the island, and I think with the pros on the island too, it's no skin off their back. It's they don't really, well, you know what I mean? They're having fun out there riding in Zwift, and it does mess with, the only time that it gets frustrating is when it's a day where I'm looking at it and I would like to go for a jersey for the fun of it, and there's someone up there who did something that's inhumanly impossible, and it didn't get flagged, and you're kind of like, well, that's a little frustrating at the moment. But at the end of the day, I think that those guys are either somebody who put their kid on the trainer and just put this resistance way down, or or they know, and I don't know, maybe they're just kind of trolling it, you know, for kicks. And I'm not too concerned about it until real race mode comes out, really.
Yeah.
Because we're all out there just kind of rolling around. And I think Zwift will take more action slowly and methodically to not, you know, cause too many ruffles too quickly.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So listen, people can find you at twitch.tv/NathanGuerra.
Yeah, and it's Guerra, Guerra, Guerra.
Guerra.
Guerra is the best way to say it. Yeah, that's the Spanish background. So, yeah,
GUERRA.
Yeah, and it's got a roll on the R's if you want to do it right. Otherwise, Guerra is just fine.
Nathan, the voice of Zwift, it's been an absolute delight to speak to you, and may you continue to commentate for a long time to come, because I, for one, think it's just great to listen to.
Thank you so much, Simon. I really appreciate your time.
As Nathan and I discussed, cheating or miscalibration, intentional or not, is an issue in Zwift. And with such a big community now surrounding the game, controversy can blow up around people's performances. That happened to Rachel Elliott. Now, Rachel Elliott is a bit famous because she became the first woman to win a Zwift race in a field dominated by men. And she's with me now. Hi, Rachel.
Hi there.
Let's start with some basics. What was the race?
It was the Monday night Kiss race, which was held on the Watopia circuit. It was five reverse laps. So it was quite a long race, I think. It's obviously only the first one I've done, but I think it was one of the longer races that's been held. Yes, it was a bit of a shock.
Wow. Well, we'll get to your win in a minute. I mean, I know it's quite difficult to tell, particularly if it was your first race, but how big do you think the field was?
I've actually got no idea. I was a bit of an amateur when I started, and I was a bit late going to the warm-up line, basically, because I'd done a warm-up, shut Zwift down, booted it up again, yeah. Got to the start line a bit late. But as far as I could see, there are probably around 40 or 50 riders, I would be guessing. And look at results afterwards, that's about what it seems to be. But I certainly started right at the back. I missed the go, so I was chasing from the off.
Wow. Well, that's a very decent field, and I would expect a field of around that size for those Kiss races. So you won. I mean, you know, let me ask you the traditional question. How did you feel?
Well, I was really happy. I was quite surprised. I don't use a keyboard when I'm Zwifting, I've got a television, which is quite a long way away from the bike, so I couldn't actually see quite what was going on, so I couldn't see any comments, and I just rode as hard as I could. I thought I was in the lead, and I could see a couple of guys chasing for about two laps, and then I just seemed to be on my own. So I was really, really happy, and I just kept pushing all the way and was really, really happy to win at the end.
Yeah, well, I'm not surprised, and massive congratulations from the Zwift cast. Now, there's this phrase that crops up when women riders do very well, and I'd just like to get your view on it. All the lady riders I've spoken to have never had a problem with it, but when a woman beats a man, there's this phrase, and the man is said to have been chicked. Have you heard that? And what's your view on the use of that?
I have heard it a lot. I've come from a running background, and that certainly used to be the phrase in races when you beat all the men, then you've been chicked. And I first heard it about 10 years ago, and it's It's quite a laughable phrase, and I just think it does stem from the fact women are biologically never going to be as strong as men. They don't have the testosterone. We've got estrogen, they've got testosterone. So biologically, we're not meant to beat the men. And I think it does come as a surprise when we do.
Yeah. But personally, I think it's actually quite a friendly phrase. And I think, but, you know, both men and women take it in good heart. But, you know, you're definitely the queen of the chipped thing on Zwift. Tell us about your real life riding. I mean, you're clearly a very strong rider.
Yes. I mean, I started running from nothing in about 2005 and quickly found out I was a pretty good runner. I sort of got down to about 36 minutes for 10K and 120 for a half. My main issue with running was I've always been quite muscular and I was always too heavy, really, to make sort of the cut to sort of being an elite runner. And I had a go cycling, and in my very early days, I cycled up Alpe d'Huez in France. And this was when I'd not really done any cycling training at all and found out I was quite fast. And the strength I've got in my muscles translated very well to cycling. And an injury in running meant I sort of switched to cycling. And the natural discipline to go to was time trialing, because it's sort of racing yourself. There's nobody else to race. You're just going as fast as you can. And I soon found out I was doing quite well and I had a year racing. And then, unfortunately for me, I had some cardiac problems. I actually blacked out on the bike, and I had to take 3 years off completely because I was blacking out sort of two or three times a day, and switched to the turbo during that time. That was pretty much all I could do. So I was doing sort of 2 to 3 hours a day every day on the turbo with no racing, and that sort of got me quite strong. I'm now fully recovered, and I came back last year and started time trialing again last year. And again, I started to do quite well, and I broke the national 30-mile record back in October. So that was the sort of the culmination of a good year. I had a very good day on the course. And for me, I rode very well. I had good power for the whole race, and sort of won the ladies and broke the record in an hour and 3 minutes for 30 miles. So
wow.
I think the Zwift race on Monday was pretty much the same length as that. And I think an hour is sort of my optimum race time and race distance. So I was really, really pleased to get that record. And hopefully this year I'm going to do more on the time trialing scene and break some more records. That would be nice.
Well, I mean, clearly, by the sound of your cycling heritage, you're kind of almost perfectly set up for the Zwift racing, which tends to be about an hour long, often on a fairly flat course, would actually favour time trialists, I would have thought.
Yes, and that's exactly how I rode the race on Monday. I sort of just time trialed the whole way.
Now, I think your average power for the race was what, about 300 watts?
Yeah, it was about 300 watts, I think just over, but about 300. And it certainly tailed off towards the end as my legs started to cramp. Yes.
And you're only, what, 62 kilos, I think?
Yes, about that at the moment. So
that gives us a kind of rough, you know, around about 5 watts per kilogram, which is obviously an excellent pace. And you can sustain that, can't you?
Yeah, I sort of can keep it going. I mean, one thing I don't have is a sort of very, very good sprint ability. So I think people commented I was riding like a time trialer, just riding at a very consistent pace for the whole race. So yes, that's sort of what I'm good at, just holding a pace down. And I think that's what comes of training on a turbo for so long, is being able to just hold this consistent pace.
Yeah, yeah. Now, speaking of turbos, what's your setup? How do you run Zwift?
Well, I've got a Tax Vortex. I did have a few problems at the start, sort of making sure the power was right, because I run it with a PowerTap wheel, so I make sure they're both fully matching all the time. And I've also tested it with SRMs, so I know it's very accurate, and I sort of test it once a week or so to check the calibration is completely right. So it is a smart trainer, and obviously I've got the hills emulated, so I'm running it with that, and I've just got a standard desktop PC which I use to run Zwift on. So I've got quite an old bike I attach it to, but yes.
Well, I mean, it's the Vortex, when properly calibrated, can be extremely accurate, but to calibrate it against a power meter is just about the perfect way of doing it, I think.
Yeah, so it seems to be work very well. I mean, I ran it for a couple of hours a week or so ago against an SRM, and it was actually, the power was actually slightly lower than the SRM. So I'm pretty sure it's accurate.
Yeah, yeah, me too. Now, this is pertinent because in some of the farther reaches of the Facebook groups and, you know, with some pretty ill-informed comments, there were one or two people questioning your win. How did you respond to that?
I'm not a very confident person when it comes to cycling. And initially, when I read the comments, I did get quite upset. I don't think it's quite a natural thing for many people to do.
Absolutely.
And... you know, I sort of, yeah, I did get upset, and I responded with comments to show that I was upset. But then I started to get so much support from people, it turned things around a bit. And when I put it into perspective myself, I actually thought, hang on, these people are, if they haven't done their research on me, they are going to think these things. It does look slightly strange when a woman who no one's heard of, and I really, really genuinely don't expect anyone to have heard of me, to just roll up in a race and push out 5 watts per kilogram and win it. It's not something which you'd expect a woman to do. So I fully understand why people made those comments. And I know there's one person in particular who made quite an open comment. And thinking about it, I actually don't blame him. It was a rant, and that's what he thought. So I can't really blame him for making those comments. And I'm guilty of it myself. I was on Zwift yesterday, and I had the fastest overall lap for a while, and within about 5 minutes somebody beat it, and I thought, oh, you know, they're not on a proper power meter, and I thought, hang on, this is the same treatment people were giving to me. And when I looked, they were on a proper power meter. They had I think they were on I don't know, it wasn't a smart trainer, it was actually a proper power meter. And I thought, no, they've genuinely got that fastest lap. So I think we're all guilty of thinking of it, and I can't really blame him, but I think people just need to think a bit before they blame, and perhaps do a bit of research. It doesn't take much to put Rachel Elliott cycling into Google and see all my results come up. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I think that's a very balanced response because you know that was a stupid comment in hindsight. If an even basic level of research had been done, but on the upside, there was this fantastic outpouring of support for you as well.
Yes, there was, and I think it's great to see. And I think the person who was second in the race was one of the most supportive people, and I'm very grateful to him for his support. And it turns out we've actually done time trials together ourselves in the past, so we sort of do know each other, if only from a result sheet. And I do think it's great, and particularly the women who've supported me as well. There's another sort of sub Facebook group for ladies who Zwift. And there's been some absolutely fantastic support in there, which I'm very, very grateful for. So so it's actually been great from that perspective.
Yeah, no, I can imagine that. Now, as you might know, Zwift currently has a talent search in conjunction with a women's pro team, Canyon SRAM. Are you tempted?
I mean, I didn't join Zwift because of that. I joined in December, so I'm quite a new joiner, but not very new. But when I saw that, it was obviously very interesting to me, and it's definitely something I can pursue. And I mean, whether or not it's me, I think it's great that they are doing it, and it's something which will really help to promote cycling amongst women. So I think it's a really, really great thing to do.
And could your hat be going in the ring, Rachel?
Oh, it might well be. We'll have to see. But as I say, I think it's a great opportunity. And I mean, my main aim now is just to enjoy cycling and see where it takes me. I mean, I love cycling. I love training. I love racing. I mean, Monday, I was really, really looking forward to that race all day. I couldn't wait to get home and race. So we'll just see how it goes.
Interesting. Now, I gather some of the teams on Zwift are competing for your signature.
Yes, they are. I think probably nearly every single team has contacted me. And I really hate letting people down. So I'm sort of looking at everything at the moment. And I hate saying no to anyone. So as a time trialer, I'm quite a solitary person. So we'll have to see. But I'm staying as a just an unattached Harrier at the moment, as you call it in running, and just doing my own thing.
well, it must be great to be in such demand. You're obviously going to carry on racing.
Oh yes, yes, and I've got quite sort of big plans this year in the real life world. So we'll have to see. But on Zwift, I will give it another go. It's shaken me a bit, I have to say, my first experience. But I'm sure I'll be back.
Well, I hope it hasn't shaken you too much, because you know, I mean, I think what people have to remember about Zwift is the social nature of it can, like all social media, be you know, have the potential to be a double-edged sword, and for the minority and frankly rather stupid opinion to attract more weight than it merits. So, you know, I think 99.9% of Zwifters will be fully behind you, Rachel. I'm sure of that.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Well, congratulations on your win. I'll certainly be looking out for you, and probably not getting anywhere near you in the races if we competed together. But very well done. That's a fantastic win and a bit of Zwift history.
Thank you very much.
Well, since we recorded that interview, Rachel has gone from strength to strength, and she's busy breaking records and smashing PBs in real life. That's it for this special episode of the Zwiftcast. I hope you've enjoyed it, and I hope to be back with more soon.